We'll commence in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the week of October 6, 2006, this is the Rain Report. I'm Neil Schaefer, AA9KK. The words commonly and universally are two words one has to watch out for in amateur radio antenna tower litigation. Just ask Fred Hoppengarten, K1VR. A graduate from Harvard Business School, Fred has been a member of the bar for over 30 years. Most of his work is in antenna law. In fact, he authored the ARRL book on antenna zoning. The following is an excerpt from his talk given at the 2006 Dayton Hamvention in Dayton, Ohio.
There is one opinion that has come out from the Federal Communications Commission, which can be read in a negative way, and occasionally astute boards will find this opinion. It's a report and order of the Federal Communications Commission written by Kathleen Ham, who subsequently left the commission. She's now with T-Mobile. But when misread, this could really trip you up unless you've had this little briefing we're about to have. It has, in fact, come up in East Fishkill, New York, where the Board of Appeals found it and tried to make trouble for the Ham. And that's what caused me to investigate thoroughly and think about how to do this if you ever face that situation. So let's start with what it actually says. This is the wording from the paragraph. What you've got to be afraid of is, we do not believe that a zoning regulation that provides extreme or excessive prohibition of amateur communications could be deemed a reasonable accommodation. I love this, extreme or excessive prohibition. I've always wondered how there can be degrees of prohibition. We believe that a regulation that would restrict antennas that do not present any safety or health hazard, antennas that are similar to those normally permitted for television viewing, not a reasonable accommodation. But here's the tricky sentence. If the Ham is proposing the type of antenna that is commonly and universally associated with those that one finds in a factory area or industrialized complex, then it appears to say that the board could rule against you. So the real question is, what does this mean? If you don't think about it really hard, that's where you could be tripped up. This is a closer look at what the FCC was writing about. This is from the actual paragraph. When the community wants to preserve as livable neighborhoods, I just want you to notice that they're now positing the possibility that having a radio ham could make a neighborhood non-livable. The type of antenna commonly and universally associated, okay? Why are we concerned about this? After Mr. Chedester, KB1IPR, who I represented at the local level, won. The town rewrote the bylaw. Since they'd done all this legal research, they discovered this, and they decided to pony this over into the local bylaw. Under the general provisions of the bylaw governing antennas, it now says, antennas and towers commonly and universally associated with those that one finds in a factory or an industrialized complex shall not be permitted under this chapter for use in residential zones. And this is where it gets tough. By the way, just a small comment for those of you who care about it. The Chattista case was decided at the state court, not in a federal court, for the simple reason that the ham involved brought in litigation counsel to handle it out there in that part of the state. I work cooperatively with attorneys all over the country. This was no problem to me. But that particular attorney decided that he could not choose to be in one court or the other, and he had to go forward in both at the same time. That gave the federal court the opportunity to stand aside. They didn't have to, but they chose to legally, and perfectly permissible decision. So that's why it went up on the state side. In any event, Chedester case, KB1IPR, he had a 140-foot tower, 19 feet wide at the base, 5 feet wide at the top, had been granted a permit. The neighbors really didn't like it. Although I got to tell you, he lives on 10 acres, it's a horse farm. It's really not a problem, even though it sounds huge even to radio hams. But this is how it can become of a concern to you when it appears as a hurdle you're going to have to overcome. Let's take a look at reading this thing like a lawyer. What does commonly and universally mean? Bad writing at the FCC, frankly. Commonly is a subset of universally. So what it's really talking about is that communities may forbid installations universally associated with those found in an industrialized complex. What's that mean? Basically, you see it and you think factory or industrial. Now, here's the problem. What's that all about? These cellular monopoles are, in I think everyone's minds, not necessarily limited to factory or industrial areas. They can appear anywhere. A cellular lattice tower is a tougher call. It's not very relevant to this crowd, at least.
You're listening to a 2006 Dayton Hamvention presentation by author and attorney Fred Hoppengarten, K1VR. We'll bring you the conclusion to his talk in a moment. This is the Rain Report.
You're listening to the Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
Then you get into the commercial microwave towers. I'm really not worried that a municipality is going to be banning these kinds of things from the backyards of radio hams. I don't think you guys have weather radar. Certainly I'm not worried about that in a residential neighborhood. Nor am I worried about the 2,000-foot South Dakota tower in the left picture, or the five-tower array of 540-foot towers for WAMG in Natick, Massachusetts. I suggest to you that what we have here is situations that are commonly and universally associated with residential neighborhoods. So if anyone tries to tell you that these kinds of things are prohibited by that report and order from the FCC, I think the way you attack it is with photographs, and that's why my talk is different today. I was the attorney for K1IR and for K1NDF. Oh, by the way, NDF is using an AN wireless tower, no guy wires. I am a fan of taking photographs from the public way and trying to get a tree or power lines in the way of the picture so that it becomes plain that these elements of the antenna system are less obtrusive than the power line. Can't always find a power line when you want one. This is the actual citation that you can always come back to in another reports and orders that came out from the FCC. PRB1's guidelines bring to a local zoning board's awareness the very least regulation necessary must be the aim of its regulation, so that such regulations will not impinge on the needs. Although we lawyers have varying opinions on the subject of engineers, now and then they're useful. And this is the FCC report and order which justifies the usefulness of engineers in this world. And that is that engineers can be helpful in developing the needs case. There are a couple of ways to go about doing it. You can try it at VHF and UHF with a program written free and available on the internet from a VE2 called Radio Mobile. All of its background and usefulness is available in both French and English. In addition to that, the VOA CAP, which is the Voice of America propagation program, can be very helpful in developing a needs case. There's a tremendous needs case that was developed in the W6TER New Mexico case. W6TER developed the case for K5HAB, another Albuquerque ham, which is a very interesting case. It is on the on my website, antennazoning.com. You can go take a look at it. And it shows you how you can go about the engineering. Look for antennazoning.com and find the K5HAB case. And it'll tell you how to go about the engineering to show that you absolutely positively need the height that you're talking about. There are uses for engineers. So, what was it that the FCC was envisioning as constrained? I suggest to you that it doesn't appear in writing anywhere, but if you're arguing the case and worried about it, this is what you ought to say to the board. What the FCC was talking about was large microwave dishes, high in the sky, radomes, lighted and marked towers, lots and lots of VHF and UHF whips on Rhone 45, because that's something you often see in an industrial or factory area, and not much else. Your typical tower with Yagis was not what the FCC was talking about in that report and order. Things that are not universally associated with an industrial or factory area, HF Yagis on small profile, to me, anything less than Rhone 85. Rhone 85 and less is small profile. Just because you have multiple towers doesn't mean that you're factory or industrial, as long as they're not lighted and marked. Certainly verticals, wire antennas, small dishes. When you go for your permit, apply for only 2 or 3 microwave dishes, not 7 or 10. You don't have to cover every direction at once. Or think about a rotator. My final words to you are, vaya con las diapositivas. Go with slides.
You've just heard an excerpt from a talk by the ARRL antenna zoning book author and longtime attorney, Fred Hoppengarten, K1VR. Fred discussed some of the finer points of amateur radio antenna tower litigation during this 2006 Dayton Hamvention presentation. For Fred's website and email addresses, check out the new Sites Mentioned page on therainreport.com. Thanks to RAIN webmaster Chris Peterson, KG0BP, for his diligence. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990-2006 RAIN, all rights reserved. Now, for RAIN's founder-producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Neil Schaefer, AA9KK, wishing you a very 73 from all of us at RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network.